Hey, everybody, I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K 12 Education Talk Radio. It's almost the end of August. I can't believe it. August 26th. Wow. 2021. It's a pleasure to have you here today. An honor to be speaking to you. I got to tell you, we're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, okay, which is the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education, over at ace-ed.org. Go over there, see what we're doing. We got new surprises coming up pretty soon over there, and we've also got our wonderful magazine, which is Equity and Access Pre-K-12. You'll love it. It's an online journal we publish every other month, and that issue now is the back-to-school issue. It's up there on site at ace-ed.org. Our podcasts are all over there. You can check it out, pick and choose as you like. You're welcome to join with us. We want your voice to be heard. It's all about having teacher voice, educator voice over there, and the industry voice. ace-ed.org, the American Consortium for Equity in Education. And someone who's always believed in equity, Jim Harvey, my good friend, is retiring soon, but currently as he moves on, he is still the executive director of the National Superintendents Roundtable, but they are merging as Jim moves on with the Schlechte Center, all right, with Steve McCannon. Steve McCammon is the president and CEO. And I don't know if I have both of them on one line or just one of them. Jim, are you there?
I'm here, Larry, and I just emailed you about 10 minutes ago to say that Steve has a relatively minor challenge in his house. But he's not able to get away for the interview, so we're hoping that you can pick up with him later. But you know, Larry, I am always happy to chat with you, and I always learn something.
Oh my God, it's a pleasure to have you here, Jim. Okay, and I'm not sending you into the sunset. I hate to even think about that, for goodness sakes. But lucky you getting into retirement. I just love it. When's the big? Do you have the big day all set yet?
Yes. To smooth the transition with the Schlechte Center, I'm continuing as executive director through December 31, Steve McCannon, who's the president and CEO of Schlechte, will also assume the role of executive director of the Roundtable. And we are, I have to tell you, we are thrilled with the partner we've been able to find.
We
pursued an intensive sort of two-year process of trying to find the right group, and there were a lot of promising avenues that we explored, but none of them were quite right. And then, bang, the Schlechte Center showed up on our radar screen.
Wow!
And it's just a group that shares our values and works with superintendents, so it's almost an ideal fit. It's an ideal fit. It's as though you're putting your hand into a glove that you've worn for a long time.
Right. That is what a way. What a way to say it. That's great. But after December 31st, we're going to miss you, but it is a well-deserved retirement, my friend. I have a feeling we're going to hear from you after December 31st. I have this odd feeling.
Well, I hope so.
You're not going to be like General MacArthur and fade off into the sunset. You'll be doing articles from the Caribbean or wherever you're going to wind up, or in Tahiti, sitting
well,
there
actually,
under an umbrella drinking
a
Mai Tai. Yeah. What?
No. I'm talking to you actually today from Ireland. So if I'm doing articles from anywhere, that's where it'll be.
What are you doing in Ireland? Are you on vacation?
Yeah. Well, yes. I was born and raised here, so you know I get back here quite a bit. And
I didn't know that.
People know me for years, and they're surprised to learn that. Other people, I open my mouth and they say, "Are you Irish? Are you Canadian?"
Oh, wow.
They pick up something.
Good for you, all the relatives and friends over there, Jim. What part of Ireland are you from?
Donegal, Ireland, way up in the northwest corner.
Oh,
the remotest part of a remote corner of Ireland.
And that's interesting because
you know
live
what's
in
interesting?
Seattle,
we
the
have,
northwest corner. You live in the northwest corner of the United States. You must like the northwest in both places.
That's right. Well, no, I like this rainy weather. And, you know, the thing that strikes me about being here in Donegal, which, as I say, is very remote, we have fabulous Internet access here. You know, sometimes the cell phone doesn't work if you get into a cell phone ditch. But the internet access here and the connectivity here, I think it's better than we have in Seattle, believe it or not.
Well, I do believe it, as a matter of fact. I absolutely believe it. And you sound like you're next door. You sound like you're talking to me from the next room, for goodness sakes. It's unbelievable.
Right.
Okay? And I hope you're having a good time on vacation. Are you there with your family, or what's going on?
I'm here with my wife. My son and his family are supposed to come over, but my youngest grandson got sick, so we took my oldest grandson with us, and we had a good time with him.
I bet you are. Yeah. Okay, well, I continue to have a good time. That's just great. Thank you for thank you for getting in touch with us while you're away, so far away, so we appreciate it. Actually, you're probably closer to me in Maine, in Ireland, than you are in Seattle. I don't know. Have to check
you know,
that out.
That's an interesting possibility. It's highly likely that we are.
it really is. So now your murder, Steve's not here. And by the way, we will do another show, like say, in early December, as you're ready to go. We'll bring Steve on at that point. How's that sound? Is
that's
that going to be good?
That's terrific.
Okay.
Wonderful.
All right, good.
I know he's eager to meet with you.
Oh, I can't wait. Okay. Tell me about how – this is interesting. I don't know that much. I was going to ask Steve a lot about it, about the Schlechte Center. Okay. Their website is Schlechte – and I got to spell the word for everybody – S-C-H-L-E-C-H-T-Y. I'll do it again. S-C-H-L-E-C-H-T-Y, SchlechteCenter.org. Lead the charge in learning. It's a nice group here. Okay, they're good. They're talking about the roundtable, et cetera. Where are they located, and what do they do? Jim.
Phil Schlechte was one of a group of people like Vern Cunningham, who was one of the founders of the roundtable, who were really leaders of American education and really, I think, worthy successors of Horace Mann in the late 20th century. And he had an idea that to really get things done, Phil Schlechte had the idea that to really get things done, districts needed to have sort of a central direction and that they needed to organize most of their activities around the direction. And the central direction that he was interested in was what was good for kids. So he founded the Schlechte Center, I think, about 25 years ago, and has worked with districts and with states on implementing a set of principles that are very copacetic, to use a word that I first learned in the 1960s, but is very much in line with with the principles that we have. Now, so George Thompson was the president of the Schlechte Center for years. Steve McCammon was his deputy. George has retired, and Steve has stepped in as the new president and CEO. What we liked about the Schlechte Center, as opposed to several of the other quite promising groups that we had talked to, was that, A, it was nonprofit. It wasn't profit-oriented. B, it was hands-on. We had some opportunities with universities, and we realized that we had a sense that they would want to talk about the issues but not really get their hands dirty with the issues. The Schlechte Center had its own superintendent's leadership network that worked with the Schlechte principals. So now the superintendent's leadership network has about 50 members. They meet a couple of times a year, and they have a bigger meeting in Florida in July. And they'll be adding to their portfolio as a separate group the Superintendent's Roundtable, and we have in any given year between 95 and 100 members.
Yep.
So they will be sort of vastly expanding or nearly tripling the number of superintendents that they're working with. And we are discussing, even as I speak, how we might be able to offer superintendents joint membership in the Superintendent's Leadership Network and in the Roundtable. So, you know, what's the difference between the Leadership Network and the Roundtable?
I was just going to ask you that. So go ahead.
Yeah. Right. No. I was reading your mind.
You were?
I was. The Schlechte Center works hands-on within districts, helping them organize their activities to improve learning for all students. So they're very much in the nuts and bolts of what's going on within districts. The roundtable has been much more oriented around worrying about the political in a broad sense, not in a partisan sense, but the political and economic and social environment in which our public schools are operating, because we have felt ever since, the Roundtable has felt ever since it started, that policymakers were barking up the wrong tree when they tried to fix all of the problems in schools within the school system itself. That the larger, particularly the economic environment of underfunded public schools, of abusive sort of rhetoric about the effectiveness of public education, and a large number of low-income students in public education, enrolled in public schools, meant that they were, you know, they were missing the forest for the trees. That you really needed to worry about these exogenous factors, if I could, you know, pick a fancy word.
That's even better than copacetic, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
That ever since the Coleman report, we've known that the social and economic factors account for somewhere between 70% and 80% of tested student achievement.
Yep.
Yet you never hear about it. You never hear about it.
Yep.
In the policy discussion. So that's what we've been worried about. And I think this merger with Schlechte now offers us the opportunity to get two sets of activities going. One is worrying about how well organized the schools are and if they properly understand their function and if they're moving in the right direction. And the second set of issues is this larger socioeconomic environment for the schools. And I have to say, you know, after 40 years of abusing schools, ever since The Nation at Risk came out, we really seem to be finally, I think, as a country, turning towards the needs of students. And I'm hopeful that this new tax credit that's been enacted by Congress has the possibility of cutting the rates of child poverty in the United States in half. And that may be the biggest educational reform of the last 50 years.
Without, we can solve that problem. We're well on our way.
Yeah.
Okay? Because poverty, if I may, so many challenges. Okay? But what it does, it limits a child's experience, all right? And we say, well, every kid can become a chemist. But kids who are in abject poverty don't even know what the hell a chemist is, okay? You know, we have to have to move them out of there. And with poverty, Jim, comes under-resourced schools, okay? And that's another challenge that we have. The under-resourced schools are the ones that are in the poverty-stricken areas. It's a vicious cycle. It's enough to drive you nuts, okay? And I hate to say it. It's one of the few good things to come out of this stinking pandemic, okay, which, by the way, is still going on and making educators crazy as we head back this year, okay? But at least it's kind of opened the wound, and we're now hopefully we're able to clean out the wound and make it all better. Okay, we'll see if that actually happens. What are your thoughts on the pandemic in education, Mr. Harvey?
Well,
Dr. Harvey,
right. I think your comment about cleaning out the wound is right on target. Those of us in education have known about the under-resourced schools for a long time.
Of course,
we've known that rural communities, in particular, and many inner-city communities don't have access to the internet, or if the internet's available, that people can't afford it. We have over 50% of the kids in public schools are low-income students, and you said very well there that the kids don't understand the possibilities that are available to them.
They don't.
The Roundtable some years ago heard from the French Minister of Education. And he said something that one of our superintendents had said, said something similar to what one of our superintendents had said, Carla Santorno, the superintendent of Tacoma, Washington. She said,
sure.
We have kids in Tacoma that have never been to Seattle. Well, Seattle's only 50 miles away.
Yeah.
The French Minister of Education said, we have kids in Paris that have never been beyond the couple of blocks in their own neighborhood.
That's right.
So here is this, you know, this fabulous city of light, and the kids aren't even in Paris aren't even able to take advantage of it. So getting
let me get
out of
the city.
This
I
poverty
people,
environment has,
I, wait,
has a lot
I
of
live 45 minutes. I live 45 minutes from Portland, Maine, which is not the biggest
right.
city in the country, but it certainly is a nice city. Okay, and it's a delightful
mm-hmm.
city with good museums and all that. There are many, many kids who live in my community, okay, the next county over, okay, who have never been to Portland, let alone Boston,
right.
let alone anywhere else, okay?
Right.
And what do you
I'm
do
sure
with
that's
that?
True. Whereas, ETS did a big study of this years ago that we heard about, and I can't remember the name of the study, but I can
right.
get it to you later if you're interested. But
sure.
they compared the advantages that a child, an upper-income child, has with the disadvantages that a kid from a lower-income family has. And they described a situation in which our children, have advantage piled on advantage. You have your well-educated parents. You have books all over the house. You have parents who have the time and the energy to pursue their kids' education. You have summer camps, and you have foreign travel. All of this stuff expanding the experiences of these well-to-do kids, including
exactly.
my own children.
Look
have
at your grandson with you.
Lower-income children. That's right. There you go. And
yeah.
you have, and he's been to Georgia in the former Soviet Union. He's been to
oh, wow.
England. He's been to France.
Yeah.
And he's been to Japan. When you think about it, all of these advantages just are added on top of each other. Whereas for low-income children, you have disadvantage piled on disadvantage. You have parents, frequently a single mother, worried about making ends meet from day to
yeah.
day and putting food on the table. If they are fortunate enough to have a car, a blown tire can just destroy their ability to get to work. They may
yep.
have trouble finding work. The schools are under-resourced. There's gang violence in many of these communities. I mean, on and on and on. And the school as a treatment against all of that is a very weak treatment. So we have to get, you know, there's an issue of getting the society organized properly so that kids can take advantage of what they have in school. You asked how the superintendents are doing with COVID.
Yeah.
We did a series with Education Week called Lessons from the Kitchen Table.
Yeah.
We just finished it.
Great.
I'm happy to
Great.
Send you a link to it. It's 17
sir.
Lessons from superintendents, our superintendents in the roundtable, about important issues that they learned while they were forced from their office and basically forced to run their districts from their kitchens.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are things such as, you know,
funny.
You can't be a lone ranger. You need to work as a team. You need to work with other superintendents to keep your spirits up because it was very dispiriting work. When you see a challenge, you've got to respond to it. And our superintendents, I think, are quite proud of the fact that when they saw this digital divide between low-income communities in their districts and the upper-income communities,
yeah.
they responded by putting hotspots.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say
within,
that, yeah.
Within distance of every
yep.
every house in the district. As one superintendent put it, we were like the Marines. The difficult we did it once, and the impossible takes a little longer.
Yeah. So actually, he's
so
right.
That's one way we dealt with the COVID epidemic, and we've also surveyed superintendents, and we're just sort of getting the results back now. And I have to acknowledge, there's nothing scientifically credible about what I'm about to say, but we
yeah.
have insights into how brutal the environment was personally for superintendents. I mean, superintendents, when they're talking about these issues, they frequently say in sort of an abstract, soft way, how do we take care of ourselves and our own well-being and mental health? Well, we have superintendents reporting to us that they had strokes, that they had to have open heart surgery. Some of them turned to drink before they pulled themselves around. Many, many, many of them talked about the power of prayer for them in the past year. It was very touching. One superintendent said, "I pray," this is a woman, "I pray for the kids in my district every single day." The very powerful insights into this and into the amount of really ugly abuse that these public leaders have taken as they've tried to do their best for their kids in their district. We asked if they'd thought about quitting, and a lot of them thought about quitting, but most of them, for the most part, decided they were going to continue on, mainly because they'd already started plans that they wanted to finish. They felt that their communities needed them. They felt that if they left, their experience will go out the door with them and the district.
And they care about the kids.
They care about the kids.
They really do. And you know the experience, what you're talking about. And this did not come to light, per se, with superintendents, okay? But it certainly came to light with teachers, and the other group that it's happening with is nurses. Okay, and the nurses are just beat up right now. They are so beat up, and teachers are so beat up. You know, we kid about that. That summer vacation really helped teachers take a breath and get reorganized for next year and all that sort of thing. This year there were not that many summertime vacations because of the crazy school year. Okay, and a lot of people had a week off maybe before they had to go back with PD and all that sort of thing. And I'm glad you brought that up with the superintendents because it is a tough job. Okay? And, you know, Jim, I want you to go back in history. I want you to go back in history. Talk to me. And I never asked you this before in all the shows we've done. What got you to start the superintendents roundtable? I mean, you know as well as I do, we have good friends at AASA, the Superintendents Association. But you started the second group. And you started it for a reason. Well, you must have seen something missing or whatever. Go ahead.
Well, the Superintendent's Roundtable is a direct descendant of a Danforth Foundation-funded project called the Forum for the American School Superintendent. And when Danforth went out of the foundation business, they just stopped funding anything. The members of that forum said, "We have to continue." And I said, "Well, I've tried other foundations, and none of them want to pick it up." Oh, they said, "We'll pay for it ourselves." So we started with four superintendents, and now we're up to 100. So
yeah, you
what
are.
Did we,
and
what did
were
we,
you at that
what
time? Wait
we,
a minute. What were you at that time?
I was an independent consultant in Washington, D.C., so I helped start the Danforth Forum. And I had been a former staffer in the House Education and Labor Committee in the House of Representatives and an education lobbyist in the Carter White House. So I sort of understood education from a policy perspective.
You did?
But not from, you know, I've never been a teacher or a principal or superintendent, but I understood the importance of these institutions in local communities, which actually many people never stop and think about it. But in most communities, including in rural areas and big cities, the school district, if not the largest employer, is one of the largest employers.
Normally it is the largest employer.
In rural areas, it's practically always the largest employer. So, it's a fulcrum of the community. It's where people go, you know, to have meetings because there's space there. It's where people go to enjoy basketball and football and school drama and to watch the band play. There is so much that a school does in the local community that people just take for granted. And suddenly, it's one of the effects of the pandemic, they suddenly realize, geez, these places are important when they shut down. We then concentrated not on the nuts and bolts of legislation, but as I said earlier, on trying to expand the leadership capabilities of superintendents so that they understood that they weren't just local apparatchiks, which is the way they're treated by many people, but that they were significant community leaders, and that they needed to, you know, that they needed to understand themselves in that context, and to deal with people like the French Minister of Education and you know, leading experts from Harvard and Berkeley as equals. Not as supplicants, and they've eaten this stuff up. They love having their horizons expanded this way. So that's how I got into it, and why, you know, I often say that I've had two great jobs in my life, and one was working in the House of Representatives because it's very prestigious, it's very high pressure, you've got a lot of balls in the air. You're doing important work. You pick up the phone and people answer you.
Yeah.
And the other was running this superintendent's roundtable because although we were very small, I took the attitude and we took the attitude of a highly successful football coach in the state of Washington who was one of the most successful football coaches ever in the history of the state. And he stuck with Division III football.
There you go.
He got offers in Division II. He got offers in Division I. He stayed with Division III. And people asked him, well, why didn't you go big time? And he said, wherever I am is big time.
There you go.
The attitude we took.
Okay, I agree, by the way.
And we behaved as though we could call the French government and say we understand the minister's going to be in the United States. Can we meet with him? And he would. Or we could go to England and call up the English Ministry of Education and say, we're coming over, we need to visit some schools, and we'd like to meet with your experts on how you organize education in England. So it turns out that in education, as in just about everything else in the United States, the brilliance of this country when it's at its best is you don't have to ask anybody's permission to do anything. So we had sort of a particular outlook, a fairly progressive outlook on the schools.
You did.
Weren't interested in our views on charters or our views on vouchers or our views on this, that, or the other, they didn't have to join us. So by and large, we attracted people who were simpatico to what we were doing. We can't do, and we don't try to do, and we haven't tried to do what AASA does, which is represent the broad constituency of school superintendents, and really worry on a day-to-day basis about the legislation that's affecting them. To do legislation, and you know I've done it in the past. You've got to be there every day. Well, I'm in Seattle, so while I can comment
wrong
on what's
Washington,
going on,
Jim.
I'm not offering amendments.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
that's where the roundtable came from.
And the way you have kept this going, and done such a good job and such a sincere job, and really care about education. I'm just going to say this: Are you two things? Are you looking for new members for the roundtable? I assume the answer to that is yes. And do you like it when assistant superintendents or people who want to be superintendents get in touch with you at the roundtable? And obviously it's going to continue with Schlechte. Okay? Do you want assistant superintendents?
Yeah, this has been strictly a superintendent's network.
I know.
And when the question has arisen about whether principals or deputy superintendents or directors of curriculum could be a part of what we're doing, the superintendents, by and large, have felt that this was a very safe space for them, and they prefer to keep it that way. Now, with Schlechte Superintendent's Leadership Network, they do invite teams of district people to their July meeting. So there may be a possibility of expanding has access to some of the resources of the roundtable through that. And to answer your first question, we think that, you know, somewhere between 100 and 120 members is sort of the ideal number
sweet.
For the roundtable.
Once
it gets beyond that, it becomes very very difficult to sort of keep our eye on everyone, and it's difficult. And we have a very small staff, so it's difficult enough keeping the membership database up to date. So, but we, you know, we always have superintendents moving on. They're retiring either voluntarily or involuntarily. They move to different districts. So we're continually sort of renewing the membership. Over 15 years, we started the first year with four. Then I say the next year there were 40. We don't have a single one of the original 40 who was still an acting superintendent, an active superintendent.
Wow. Well, the world changes.
And actually,
it,
when
you
think of the turnover among superintendents, it's probably not that surprising.
No. Yeah, well, they change it every 5 years now or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Although you did, I have to say this, I was looking at a picture on the I think it's the Schlechty website. Hold on. Yeah, there's a picture of everybody. You were there. Okay, and you mentioned Carla Santoro. She's been in Tacoma for a long time, and I see Susan Enfield in the picture from Highline.
Right.
Okay, I think that's Susan. And
that's Susan. She's a star.
She's a superstar, not just a star. She's a superstar at Highline outside of Seattle, and she's done an amazing job over there. Okay, and my point is this is the consistency we need, and that's, I think, what you have done over the years is you provided great consistency to what you've done, and you make that table round, my friend. You make it round. So I want you to go and have a Guinness for me. I don't know if they still have it in Donegal, but if they do, have a couple for me. That's a hand-pulled beer at the local pub. Okay, just do that for me.
Okay, good.
If
good.
It can just be hand-pulled,
and let's get back together with Steve at some point.
We will. I promise you.
I'm sorry?
We'll do a show in December. I'm going to schedule it.
Okay, very good.
Okay?
Very good.
All right. You take
good.
Care. Have a good rest
Great
of your
talking
trip.
To you.
Thank you, Jim. Oh,
Larry, take enjoy Maine. Okay. Bye-bye.
You
now.
Too, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Have a good trip. Bye-bye.
Okay,
thanks so
much.
Everybody.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. You take care, Jim. Jim Harvey, everybody. What can I say about Jim? Okay, he'll be retiring at the end of the year. But the Superintendent's Roundtable, superintendentsforum.org. Go over there, check it out, and also check out Schlechty Center, which is Schlechty Center, schlechtycenter.org. Okay, and go over there. It's going to be a nice mixture, and believe me, Jim leaves a great, is going to leave a great legacy for all the superintendents he's worked with. It'll just keep going on and on and on. All right, check out what we do over at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thank you, Jim. Enjoy the trip.